Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Carrie Goldberg, in for Meghna Chakrabarty.
7 months after Aaron Swartz, who faced federal charges for computer hacking, took his own life, MIT released its own report today on the events that led up to his death. Swartz faced charges of hacking into an MIT computer network and downloading millions of academic articles.
Many of Swartz's supporters faulted MIT for doing too little to protect the young internet activist from federal prosecutors. But today, in a 180-page report, MIT concludes that it acted appropriately, that it did not target Swartz or call in the feds or even encourage them to prosecute him.
MIT also said the federal government pursued an overly aggressive prosecution, and it suggested that the university could have advocated more forcefully in this case for academic freedom and access to scholarly information.
With us to explain the new report is WBUR's business and technology reporter, Kurt Nickisch. Kurt, welcome.
Thank you.
So, bottom line, ultimately, tell me, does this report exonerate MIT or indict it further?
Well, it really depends on your perspective. Exonerated if you believe that MIT should have been a neutral bystander in this legal issue between Aaron Swartz and the federal government. That is sort of the main conclusion of the report. Hal Abelson, an MIT, longtime MIT professor, was the man in charge of the committee who wrote this largely internal report. And here's what he had to say.
MIT never requested a federal investigation or sought any specific results from the charges brought by the U.S. attorney. When the federal indictment was issued, MIT was named as a victim. Nevertheless, MIT was never asked for its opinion about punishment, and MIT never participated in any plea deals.
And that definitely clears up some of the charges. Some opponents of MIT had been saying that MIT had pushed for prosecution, had wanted to make an example out of Aaron Swartz, and that's not the case. So in that case, largely exonerated. But if you feel like MIT actually should have advocated for Aaron Swartz and told the federal government to back off, then this report is more indicting. And Abelson's report raised a lot of questions along those lines, whether MIT should have played a more active role.
Right, because neutrality, as Switzerland showed in World War II, is not always, in fact, the most ethical policy.
Right. It means not taking a side. And so some people would say MIT should have taken a side.
Mm-hmm. So what we've got is this narrow conclusion, which is that this sort of passive cooperation with the prosecutors and lack of energetic defense of Aaron Swartz was okay. But then in the bigger picture, we've got these questions about MIT's institutional role, its commitment to leading the way on navigating this tricky legal and ethical territory that comes with new technology. They also spoke about that as well today.
MIT President Raphael Reif said that he really did sound gratified to hear that MIT was acquitted in a way of taking sides in this matter and actually praised for taking an appropriately neutral role. But he did admit that that is a narrow issue, and he read the rest of the report that sort of raised the question about the bigger issue with more interest. Here's what he had to say about that.
An issue that addresses values that MIT admires, such as creativity and innovation, with other values that MIT respects, such as IP and the rule of law. And that's a much bigger issue, and if you, MIT, would have looked at it with that much bigger issue, perhaps the actions would have been different. And I view that as a very valid point.
And he said that that is exactly why he commissioned this report 2 days after Aaron Swartz committed suicide. He welcomes the debate about what role MIT perhaps should have played, and he's calling for sort of a university institution-wide discussion of these broader issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the discussion has already begun, in fact, on the internet and elsewhere. We'll hear more about the reactions to the report in a minute, but one of the first reactions came from Aaron Swartz's girlfriend, who called it a quote-unquote whitewash. What is she saying?
Well, Terrence Steinbrückner Kaufman very quickly criticized the report for covering up what she thought were the university's reprehensible actions. And a lot of that is saying that the university should have done more. But she also points out that the institution, MIT, actually took sides in a FOIA request between a
FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, so trying to get a document.
Between a reporter from Wired and the federal government, and actually took sides with the federal government in that case. So that, to her, is an example, and to many other supporters, is an example that MIT is taking sides. Now, MIT's answer there is that it was only becoming a party in that case because it wanted to protect some of the names in the documents of people who were kind of innocent workers at MIT who the institute was worried about them getting targeted for security reasons.
Because there are a lot of people very angry about what happened with Aaron Swartz.
Right, and they have had death threats on campus. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
So the debate on campus and beyond begins now, and it sounds like MIT is saying that it wants to address these really huge issues about what its obligation is to educate its students better about the potential consequences of what they do technologically. Is that what they're talking about?
That's exactly what Hal Abelson, the author of this report, raises, is that MIT is this institution that's dealing with these really, really tough issues about technology and privacy and government. And around us, we have all these cases like Edward Snowden and WikiLeaks, and Aaron Swartz can be lumped in with that. A lot of people see him as one and the same. And so he said that it's MIT's duty to sort of look at these issues more deeply. Here's what he had to say about that.
As part of empowering our students with this technology sophistication, we can also get them to be more reflective about the real-world consequences of the things they can do. And my hope is that MIT, and not only MIT, but other places that are engaged in technical education, will look at the opportunity to provide that kind of instruction to students.
And that, in his view, as the author of this report, is the most important opportunity in this tragedy.
Interesting. And MIT President Raphael Reif talks about wanting something good to come out of this whole thing. So that's what they're talking about.
Certainly.
Right. Well, thank you. Kurt Nikisch is WBUR's business and technology reporter. Kurt, thanks for explaining it.
Yeah, but of course.
Joining us now with reaction to the report is Harvey Silverglate. He's a civil rights attorney who was approached by Aaron Swartz to take on his case, but he was in the middle of writing his latest book. And Harvey Silverglate, welcome back to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Good to be back.
What's your reaction to this MIT report, which basically says that MIT acted neutrally in this, but basically appropriately? What's your response?
Well, I think a very good case is made here by the Abelson Group that MIT acted more or less neutrally, and I'll get to the less in a minute. But, of course, it doesn't answer the question, which is really the $64 question, and that is, how neutrally should MIT have acted, or how unneutrally should it have acted? Should it have been more active in protecting the values that would have, if the values had been implemented, would have kept the feds from going after Aaron Swartz as viciously as they did? So I think that the committee that or Abelson, who wrote this report, avoided making certain value judgments, but does give the reader enough facts and information so that the reader can make value judgments. My value judgment is that MIT did not do enough to protect Aaron Swartz, or for that matter, all of its students, who many of whom easily could have been in Swartz's shoes.
Well, let me read you one thing that this report said. MIT says one of the reasons it remained neutral or silent in this case was, and I'm quoting now, the good faith belief based on private conversations with the lead prosecutor that MIT's opinion would have no effect on the prosecution and that public statements might make circumstances worse for Aaron Swartz.
My eyes bugged wide open when I read that, because in another part of the report, Abelson writes that MIT hired counsel, outside legal counsel, with experience in and knowledge of the Department of Justice and the U.S. Attorney's Office. And in fact, if that lawyer really knew what he or she was talking about, the lawyer would have recognized that MIT publicly weighing in against this prosecution would likely have had a tremendous impact on what the U.S. Attorney's Office was doing. Just like any other organization, you know, sunlight is a great disinfectant, as one Supreme Court justice was wont to say. And if MIT would have gone public about this, it absolutely could have influenced how the U.S. Attorney's Office operated. So I suspect there was the lawyer was not as as educated about the office as one would think.
Well, in the report, MIT makes the point that it didn't call in the feds, that it didn't pursue what it called an overly aggressive federal prosecution. That was the call of the U.S. attorney in Boston. And so the university says it remained neutral in that case. Why is it, do you think, MIT's obligation to advocate in this case rather than remain neutral?
Well, because the way the U.S. attorney reacted, and by the way, it was predictably reacted, anybody who knows that office would have realized that there would have been a gigantic overreaction in this case, that anybody who the MIT had an obligation to make sure that the kind of overreaction that was predictable would not engulf many of its students and, for all you know, some of its faculty members. In other words, MIT had an institutional obligation to try to curtail the worst basest instincts of the Federal Department of Justice.
Well, do you give MIT some credit for at least suggesting this, that the university says that while its neutrality might have been prudent, it acknowledges that it didn't take into account the wider background of information and the whole discussion around information, in which it said MIT people have traditionally been passionate leaders. And as we heard reporter Kurt Nickisch say, they've called for a sort of discussion and exploration about the about this issue, about the wider context of how this all happened.
Well, two things. First of all, neutrality in this situation was not a blessing and was not the right stance to take. MIT has an obligation to protect students and protect the search for knowledge, and an overreaction by the department was guaranteed to inhibit both. So MIT's stance of neutrality, to me, rings hollow and, in any event, erroneous. I think they've recognized that now. If another such case would come up, I think that MIT would publicly and quickly jump into the fray to try to influence the course of events. This said, what MIT did is not that unusual in American higher education, which more and more, I've seen it, I've been a student of American higher education since I started practicing law in 1967, and it has become increasingly corporatized. There's an enormous number of PR people who are suddenly working at universities, and they worry a lot about donors rather than academic and moral principles. And so this is a trend which, incidentally, is less developed at MIT than in other places like Harvard, for example.
All right. But, well, Harvey, I'm going to stop you there just because our time is up, but I'm very grateful to you. That's Harvey Silverglade. He's a civil rights attorney in Cambridge. He also runs the Foundation of Individual Rights in Education. Harvey, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Stay with us. Up next, the debate over cameras in the courtroom. When it comes to cases like the Whitey Bulger trial, would they increase openness or foster a media circus? I'm Carrie Goldberg.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.